know, more than perfectly, we are honored to have as our guest Pir Zia. Zia Inayat Khan is the peer or spiritual leader of the Sufi Order International, a universalist Sufi order, and the founder of the Suluk Academy, Elixir Magazine, and the Seven Pillars Review, an online journal that seeks to cultivate awareness of the unity of existence and the qualities of heart that naturally arise from this awareness, nobility of character, genuine civility, and creative optimism. Ah, what a good idea. Pir Zia is the son and successor to Pir Vilayat Inayat Khan. He was born in Novato, California. So, yes, roots. We shout out to our California team. Grandson of Hazrat Pir Omurshid Inayat Khan, the founder of the order, and like his predecessor, Pir Zia carries forward the message of universal Sufism. In addition to the interfaith mystical training he has received from his father, Pir Zia has studied Buddhism under the auspices of the Dalai Lama and Sufism in the classical Indian tradition. He is the editor of A Pearl in Wine, Essays on the Life, Music, and Sufism of Hazrat Inayat Khan. He holds a doctorate in religion from Duke University. Welcome, Pir Zia.
Thank you, Caroline. I'm very happy to be here with you.
Ah, it is a delight, and more than perfect. So in perusing so much of what you are contributing to the world, I was captivated by the phrase green hermeticism. That's something that you've said, right?
Yes, it is. That is a project that has emerged out of the Suluk Academy, which is our school of esoteric studies here at the Abode of the Message, where I live in upstate New York on the site of a former Shaker village. And it is here that we offer courses in concentration, contemplation, meditation, realization, the whole spiritual unfoldment of the inner life as practiced in the tradition of Sufism. And out of that work, we increasingly felt the need to expand beyond our unique culture of Sufism, which is rooted in a deep and long tradition, and to reach out to collaborators in parallel traditions, in other disciplines, and to begin to build a school that is interdisciplinary and interfaith, and to make space for the movement of our time, the movement of ecology, social justice, health and wholeness, authentic community, spiritual depth, the whole movement toward planetary consciousness. And as a first step in that direction, we began to work with some of our neighbors, specifically two, Christopher Bamford and Peter Lambeau Wilson. And afterward, we were joined by a third, Kevin Townley. And the three of them have worked together with us on this project of green hermeticism, which is concerned with reviving the Renaissance sciences of hermeticism as a form of physical science, and specifically transformation of the elements, biological alchemy, spagyric alchemy. So revival of a tradition within science that is concerned with a tangible physical processes, but which is also attuned to the inner condition of the practitioner, so that the outer world and the inner world are harmonious in the procedures that are undertaken.
That I want to sign up immediately. That is perfect. Yes, because just what I was grabbing off of my research, you know, yes, dedicated the ecologically oriented revivification of hermetic alchemical wisdom, as you just said, with much more eloquence, dedicated to cultivating awareness of unity of existence. Yes, that naturally arises. So we love that, because that's also in listening to your discourses on YouTube. And also, I did hear you speak 2 years ago, and what I've put out over the airwaves, which was so wonderful, was where you said in Sufism, there is only one sin and only one virtue. Could you give that to us again?
Yes. Those are the words of the teacher of my grandfather. His name was Sayyid Abu Hashim Madani, and he lived in Hyderabad in southern India. And it was there that my grandfather, as a young man, discovered him. And there was an immediate mutual recognition. And my grandfather took his hand, which means that he took him as his teacher and received initiation from him, and underwent spiritual study under his direction. Now, this master, Sayyid Abu Hashim Madani, was a very low-profile sort of teacher. He didn't. There weren't large crowds around him. He didn't put himself forward. And Murshid, my grandfather, had the privilege of attending him at his home almost every day. And for several months, the teacher, my grandfather's teacher, would receive him, and together they would speak about the weather or local politics, sports, the usual sort of things. And this went on for months and months. And then finally one day it happened that the teacher began to speak about spiritual subjects. He began to refer to the planes of consciousness. And my grandfather took out a notepad to take down his words. And as soon as he noticed this, he changed the subject and went back to talking about the weather. So my grandfather learned from him a lesson that he carried with him throughout his life, which is that this transmission of the sacred science of Sufism is something very subtle and heart. It is passed from heart to heart. It is passed on through vibration, through attunement, through manner. It is relational, and it is transformational. It is not an ideology. It is not a set of beliefs. And of course, it has its philosophy. It has its metaphysics and so forth, and its practices. And Murshid, my grandfather, eventually learned all of those things. But what he essentially learned was that what he was receiving could never be confined to any words. It was something more subtle than that. And so his teacher said on another occasion, in this path, there is only one sin and only one virtue. The virtue is the breath that is breathed with awareness of the unity of being. And the sin is the breath that escapes in negligence, in forgetfulness.
That is so wonderful. And it's also adorable, as I see myself surrounded by so many notes and books here that I will just put to one side in the spirit of your teaching. That's great, because alerted by Ally Terry Pei that you are coming to Washington, D.C. this weekend. And for our listeners who are in Washington, and also anybody who might want to make their way to Washington, Pir Zia will be presenting The Path of the Heart December 4th through 6th at Georgetown University, Copley Hall Formal Lounge. And it begins with a talk, Spiritual Chivalry, Answering the Call, which is Friday night, December 4th, 7:30 to 9 p.m. And then there are 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. And people can find out more by going to sevenpillarshouse.org. So I saw that and I was like, because what you're also embodying, and I have your chart as well, your astrological chart, but how rare it is to be part of such a rich ancestral context of teaching being passed on, which is so rare. And when I first heard you speak, I did think my own kind of rogue and renegade self going, I am averse to groups, but I go, the luxury of actually having teachings, a teacher and guide. So you were born in Novato, California, and you have your esteemed grandfather and your father. And then where did you go? Because as people who know you or seen you or look you up on the web, you look like, an Arabian Nights idea of a Sufi.
Yes, well, I have this dual heritage.
Yes.
Of the Western heritage of my mother and also my father's mother. And on the paternal side, I have, through my father's father, the Indian heritage. And so my ancestry really embodies the intention of my grandfather himself when he came to the West, which was to seek to bridge the differences between faiths, between cultures, between ethnicities, and begin to articulate a planetary consciousness.
Yes, I think there's no greater task than animating the irresistible invitation to the unifying story. It's like, oh, that's what we really need now. So in seeing some of your discourse on YouTube, you speak about tark, renunciation of renunciation. And maybe that's a good kind of way to go to weave to and fro to green hermeticism. You say that not all mystics do return to society, and yet you, having mentioned backstage, you know, your own private self, and yet heading out more school, growing form for more effectiveness, both visible audio and then just in your own contemplative heart. But so what is tark-e-tark?
Yes, tark-e-tark is the fourth renunciation. There are a series of renunciations that the spiritual seeker goes through. The first being renunciation of the world, tarke dunya, and this occurs when one realizes that the competitive, ambitious urge to accumulate possessions, to get ahead in the eyes of the world, to obtain prestige and fame and fortune, is ultimately unsatisfying. It does not fulfill the true yearning of the soul. It may be educational for the soul to go through the process of mastery through accomplishment, seeking one's desire and going through all of the steps that take one to the accomplishment of that desire. But merely amassing possessions, one realizes that rather than possessing anything, one is possessed by what one thought one possessed, and one is more impoverished than ever before. And that is not to say that that we profess a creed of denial of worldliness or the necessity of poverty, but it's simply that objects are not ends in themselves, and that happiness and fulfillment really has to come from within. And when one realizes this, that one undergoes a transition from worldliness to the search for heaven, for the afterlife, for bliss and inner bounty and serenity and peace and joy. So this is when one becomes a spiritual seeker, and one goes forward to try to develop peace and the qualities of being that really constitute true inner happiness. And so yoga, meditation, poetry, music, these are all means of pursuing this inner peace and aesthetic delight. But that is not final any more than worldly fulfillment can be final, because one reaches a point when one begins to recognize that all of these spiritual delights that one experiences, if one practices meditation, one does experience very refined, subtle, beautiful sensations, openings, awakenings. But what one finds eventually is that all of these experiences are really gifts, and that one has sought these gifts so ardently, and yet one has never given a thought to the giver. One has been pursuing possessions in the same way that one did as a material person, but now spiritually. And suddenly one realizes that there is a being, an entity, a reality beyond oneself that is infinitely beneficent, that is the source of all of these gifts, all of this grace. And one has given no thought to this being, this reality. And as soon as one recognizes this, a shift takes place, and one shifts then from seeking heaven to seeking God, to seeking the infinite and eternal source. And then one might say, as the great Sufi Rabia said, great Lady Sufi of Iraq, O Lord, if I seek you for love of heaven, then bar its gates to me. And if I seek you for fear of hell, then burn me in its flames. But if I seek you for your own sake, do not deny me the enfoldment of your grace. And so then one becomes a lover. One renounces heaven. One renounces all of the joys and delights of paradise because one wants only intimacy with God. One only wants proximity with the real, with the true, with the ultimate, with the endless and eternal. And nothing else matters but the attainment of that intimacy, of that closeness, of that ultimate unity with the totality of being. And this leads ultimately to a state of absorption in transcendence, in the totality, in the absolute. But that is not the final end. For some mystics, there can be no higher goal than transcending the world and finding oneself elevated into eternity. But then the mystic whose conscience is awake remembers that this transcendent source has created me, has created the earth for a purpose, that I have been given this body, that I have been given this span of years for a purpose, and that it is God's desire that I should live and move and act upon the earth, and I should participate in the transformation of the earth and not merely withdraw and recede into the void of the endless life. And so, though the mystic in his or her heart might feel an ardent passion just to melt into the beloved, he or she recognizes that God's desire is more urgently imperative than one's own desire. And so one sacrifices one's desire for union with God in favor of God's desire of separation from you. And one chooses to live in the world as a representative of God, to serve God on earth, to dedicate each thought, word, and action to the divine purpose.
So, because we might say, you know, the title of your talk on Friday in Washington, D.C., Spiritual Chivalry, Answering the Call, one of the themes we've been animating with many different storytellers is the Arthurian legends. The Round Table was intended to be the wedding of spiritual heart brought into the world, you know, for the benefit of all beings. And at the end of the Grail legend, it's really put on pause because all of the spiritual people decide to leave and become completely spiritual. They go, no, Arthur goes away into Avalon, and Merlin withdraws into the woods, and even Percival, who attained the Grail with his half-black Islamic twin brother, Serfaz, decide, I will go be a completely spiritual person. And the myth says, well, that's why the world is in such terrible shape, because it left the round table, it left the world to the purely secular. And part of the mythological sweep of now is, you know, kind of, come on back, you know, everyone return with their gift. But might it be fair to say, you know, that of you and maybe of how we all want to be, that we compost the desire for fame, but we embrace the desire for influence? Is that a fair thing to say about your dedication?
I think it's fair, certainly. And I would also say that there are different aspects to spiritual practice that relate to what it means to be active in a process of transforming the world. And these two aspects could be described as sensing on the one hand and templating on the other. And what I mean by this is that when you practice meditation, part of the technique is to be present, to be awake and aware, and to bear witness to what is occurring within yourself, to witness your condition. It is pure sensing. Now, there's another aspect to meditation, which could be called templating, which is to say that there are practices of meditation where one visualizes recognizes an image, or one invokes, intones a sound, one calls upon a divine name, one activates something, one brings something into experience through active imagination, through invocation, etc. So I think that these two principles that apply to meditation also apply to life in the world. And the challenge of the mystic is to maintain both. Sensing in the sense of acceptance of the world, witnessing the serene, bearing witness and breathing with awareness, testifying to the unity of all being on the breath, without ambition, without the driven urge to act on impulses. That is one component of a fulfilled life. But the other component is templating, which is to say participating in a transformational process and doing it with intentionality, with purposefulness, visualizing a goal, a beautiful ideal, working toward that ideal, working to create conditions in the world in which that beautiful ideal can more and more fully manifest. So there's always a need to balance and integrate these two orientations, that of deep acceptance and witnessing, and that of action and transformative service.
Yeah, and I think to be ever more, you know, effective players on the team of creation, I was mentioning to you backstage, I love a friend reminding me that, you know, of the Taoist rainmaker in China, when Richard Wilhelm was in China translating the I Ching, there was a terrible drought, and the villagers called on the Taoist rainbringer. And the Taoist rainbringer came and sat in meditation for 3 days, and then it poured. It just poured and poured and poured, and it apparently even snowed. And Wilhelm asked him, "How did you make the rain come?" And he said, "Oh, no, I didn't make the rain come." He said, "Where I live, you know, the community is in harmony. When I came to your valley, it was so out of kilter, it took me 3 days to come into balance. And when I came into balance, the rains came." So I love that, in the sense that I think that what part of what you're embodying and guiding and teaching and expressing is, you know, if we want to be effective, it wants to come from that balance, not the reaction.
That's right. Integration within oneself, finding balance and integrity within oneself, is, I believe, extremely valuable and influential in the world. That when we embody our ideal through the unification of our physical body, our senses, our rational mind, and our heart's keen spiritual perception, then the very magnetism of our awakening speaks wordlessly to all those whom we encounter, and the world is naturally transformed without any need to proselytize, to proclaim, to change minds. It goes back again to the story of my grandfather and his murshid. How this message of awakening consciousness is spread from glance to glance, really. In Sufism, we use the word nazar-e-inayat, which means that a certain quality of light, of presence, of natural joy is spread wordlessly from glance to glance down the generations.
Oh, how wonderful. Yes, we love those words, magnetism of our dedication, and from glance to glance. As we to and fro and tease back and forth, you know, you speak of, yes, as you have just now, the potential for a movement, you know, all of us to come together in awareness that something is afoot and belongs to all of us, and we belong to it, you speak. And so you know, also tease things into here is the world, and here, as many people's hearts are heavy with kinship and concern for Afghanistan, all the beings, the people, and all the beings there. And as I said backstage, one of the astrological phrases is where there's Mars, like, rah, 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 let there be Venus to balance it out. Wherever there's a lack of kinship leading to the unimaginative use of violence, let there be Venus, the art and beauty. And wherever there's a land at war, may we dive more deeply to the beauty it offers. And, of course, Afghanistan is the birthplace of Rumi. It is the birthplace of so much beauty in the world. And I love the quote. There's a wonderful book, An Unexpected Light, Travels in Afghanistan, that has this quote about Afghanistan. This was a land where spirits ran free and high, and a fierce exuberance filled the air, blowing away dry logic and dull reason, making almost anything seem possible. So I wonder if you could, you know, respond to this, because when many people think of Afghanistan, it certainly doesn't seem like anything is possible. It's like, oh, heavy hearts. How might your, you know, affinity, I mean, you say that part of your tradition is born in Afghanistan. What would you draw forth from the beauty of that land that we might honor and animate and activate now?
Yes, that's a beautiful question. Yes, our order has its roots in a town called Chisht in Afghanistan. Afghanistan has such an ancient spiritual culture, deep spiritual roots in the Buddhist, Mahayana Buddhist tradition, in certainly in shamanism, and also in Islamic civilization, in Sufism. Afghanistan has been a center of culture and knowledge for many centuries, and it's a terrible tragedy of modern times that these last decades Afghanistan has become a war zone. And it of course is one of the consequences of the colonial era, which is itself just one episode in the long story of the difficult exchanges between Europe and Asia, going back to the Greek and Persian wars and leading up through the Crusades, and now in contemporary times the confrontation between radical Islamic groups and Western powers. And so much of that story is deeply tragic. There are many episodes of horrific violence. But that exchange also, the exchange between East and West, between Islamic civilization and Christendom, has also given rise to tremendous cultural richness in Andalusia. The meeting of the Muslim, Christian, and Jewish traditions produced a convivencia that was a time of tremendous spiritual and aesthetic and philosophical advancement. And in fact, the tradition of chivalry, which I'll be speaking about in Washington, D.C., belongs to that exchange between the warrior code of the Christian knights and the Futuwa tradition of the Sufis. And so the violent conflict of the Crusades held within its depths a deep currents of communication that ultimately flowered in the Renaissance. So even though it is heartbreaking to witness the wars that are unfolding around us in this time, the potential exists for this clash of cultures to support the emergence of a planetary civilization that draws forth the incredible richness of both the Western historical experience and the great cultural and spiritual relics of Islam, and of all cultures, indeed. But at this moment, the clash between a resurgent, radicalized Islamic ideology and Western, capitalist values are the, let's say, presenting problem of what is really an opportunity for intercivilizational dialogue, synthesis, and planetary awareness.
Oh, beautifully said. Yeah, no, I'm reading a wonderful book, The Crusades Through Arab Eyes by Amin Malouf. I don't know if you know this book, but we want to extend our imaginative empathy. And when you were saying Tarke Dunya, I go, ah, renunciation of the world, I go, ah, because Scheherazade's sister is Dunyazad, you know, and I didn't know, it means world redeemer, and we go, oh, there's Dunyazad, and Scheherazade means city redeemer. And I think also, you know, by the power of her, I think Scheherazade is the quintessential compassionate trickster. By the power of story, she not only, you know, saves all women, lifts the curse from the land, but liberates even the tyrant who has murdered his own heart, you know. But exactly in this way, stories within stories within stories from all over. When I was in Syria, I went to Dar Men Musa, you know, I think it's 6th century monastery outside of Damascus, being restored as a place for Islamic Christian dialogue dedicated to, you know, serving the environment. We go, oh, it is happening. And we might say, I mean, I like to think that, you know, the colonizer, you know, actually seeks the healing of the colonized, but it's in this crude form, you know. You know, so certainly what we want to do then is offer the Venusian form, the stories across borders, the kinship, the poetry, the art, as you say.
Yes, that's wonderful what you've just said. It really strikes a chord with me. The impulse behind the Crusades can be seen as a reaching out toward the other, the unknown other, the mysterious other who is simultaneously admired and feared. And it's really an attempt to reintegrate the Abrahamic family, which has been unnecessarily sundered, and to reclaim and redeem the family of faith. Oh. And that's what the Parsifal story shows in Wolfram von Eschenbach's version, that when the Grail is attained, it is because the two brothers, whom you've already mentioned, recognized each other as brothers, and this opened the way for the Grail to be claimed. It was written in the aftermath of the failure of the Third and Fourth Crusades, and Eschenbach realized that the real opportunity that existed was for a recovery of the sense of the Abrahamic family as one prophetic tradition.
That's wonderful. Let me take a brief opportunity to remind our dynamic listening audience that we are in a one-day pledge drive. And if you love the quality of what we are dedicated to here, if you love the quality of what Pir Zia is expressing and the Visionary Activist Show, Martin Buber says, all life is meeting. You know, well, this is one place where we meet. So I just invite you to pledge. There is no premium except that part of your donation goes to such people as Captain Cod, to our kin who are homeless. And you can pledge by calling 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. And we're just putting this little whisper out at the moment because I want to continue the precious last 7-8 minutes we have with Pir Zia, and perhaps it will be part one of maybe more. But for the moment, here we are. Yeah, so that idea of then we're back to green hermeticism too, which is the irresistible story that, you know, that war is this unconscious, yes, desire for intimacy that wants to be educated, evolved, you know, and guided for other venues of, you know, cross discourse, you know, to find the unity and the difference. So can you say a little more also about the Sufi order and the school that you are starting in upstate New York?
Yes. Well, I can link the story of the Sufi order to what we were just discussing when we spoke about international conflicts and the legacy of colonialism. My grandfather was sent to America and Europe by his murshid, by his teacher. And his teacher belonged to a lineage that was painfully impacted by the colonial experience. The headquarters of the lineage was demolished by the British East India Company in 1857. And it was situations like that that led in many instances to the radicalization of groups. But this group, this Sufi lineage, took a completely different tack. And rather than blow back, sought healing, sought reconciliation, sought a higher level of encounter between civilizations. And so my grandfather's murshid sent him to the West as a cultural, spiritual ambassador. And my grandfather traveled for many, many years in North America and then in Europe, in Russia and France and Germany and Switzerland, and, traveling almost constantly, establishing Sufi centers, which were places for spiritual study, the practice of meditation, the practice of prayer, all to awaken the human heart as an organ of spiritual intelligence. In Sufi philosophy, the heart is the organ that is dedicated to God's self-disclosure. In other words, the whole of reality is one. The divine being is eternally unique, and this being manifests forth out of transcendence, out of the solitude of unknowing, as a hidden treasure, longing to be known, longing to experience itself, witness itself, know itself, and to become. And so each of us is brought forth into the world as a delegate of the divine longing to behold itself and reveal to itself its treasures. And the heart is this organ, is this capacity for witnessing and tasting. And so the whole Sufi path that my grandfather brought is for the purpose of synthesis, of dialogue and harmonization between the religions and communities of the world. And essentially, it is for awakening to our participation in the divine self-disclosure.
Hmm. Yes, and then I just for the, as a non sequitur, want to throw in Mullah Nasruddin, you know, who says, "I've met the king and he spoke to me. Villagers, incredible. The village idiot, what did he say? He said, get out of my way." Anyway, I just wanted to bring in Mullah Nasruddin as the element of trickster in all of this, to tease the levity into the very serious. And then now back to the really serious. You know, when we were backstage, I also said that, you know, I was reading how Sufism was the antidote to Sharia, and you said, oh, no, more complex than that.
Yes, Sharia really means, literally it means the road. So it's the path of traveling toward God, and it is really speaking, it is a way of harmony. It is the practice of ethics. It is the practice of consideration toward others and responsibility toward the divine source and toward creation. Now, of course, there are many different interpretations of Sharia, and some of these interpretations are extremely limiting, and mostly they are the products of cultural influences that are no longer really applicable, and a lot of human limitation gets mixed up in the divine law of the Sharia. In its essence, this divine law is really simply a setting of boundaries around human action so that we exist within parameters that are sustainable and respectful of the community of all life. But of course, as I say, there are very extreme interpretations, and the result has been that Sharia itself now has become synonymous with a sort of feudal, tyrannical code, which is...
Well, especially oppressive to women.
Yes, yes. And this is far from being in any way essential to the reality of Sharia. These are overlays.
So once again, I mean, alchemy always, you know, invites us to cook things down, distill, cook it back in the cauldron to what it was originally, like looking up words and you know, going back to what it was, you know, and then offering it the freedom to re-express itself, you know, the freedom from the distortions and manipulations and, you know, where it's forced into the, you know, service of unimaginative violence and war. But that's, you know, that's a good challenge, because certainly to many Americans who even know, you know, or and certainly women, they go, oh, Sharia, no, it's the enemy, you know. So again, going deeper, it's also why, you know, Ally Terry Pei had said, you know, ask Pier Zia about, you know, the true meaning of jihad. And I don't know if you've been asked that so often that it's tedious, but perhaps you might want to say, again, liberate us from the confusion of jihad meaning ar-ar-ar-ar.
I'd be glad to. I spoke earlier about this dichotomy of sensing and templating.
Mm.
And in Sufism, the words for these are shahadat, and the roots, shahada and jahada, essentially, are the words for shahada is sensing, so that is to say witnessing, and jahada is the basis of the word jihad, which means struggling, striving, efforting. So both of these are necessary. It's necessary just to witness, to be present, to be at peace, and to be mindful and vigilant, but it's also necessary to seek transformation, to strive toward the good, to struggle against tyranny, and seek the good of all beings. So that is the meaning of jihad. It means struggle, and it has an outer component, the component of seeking social justice in the world. But its inner component is what is called jihad al-akbar, the great jihad, and that is struggling within oneself, struggling to overcome the inner reactivity, the conditioning toward limitation in thought and feeling, and struggling always to expand one's horizon and broaden one's understanding and to more and more fully encompass a larger, vaster participation in the cosmic life.
Ah, very beautiful. Might we find other words than struggle?
Well, I think that struggle has the sense in it of seeking passionately, actively. So there is no complacency in it. There is no there is this sense of meeting obstacles with confidence.
Well, that's good. I would prefer to use the word meeting obstacles with confidence. So often, again, I think in our team, struggle has been like, oh, join us for the long, hard, you know, pointless, it'll never work. I mean, it's got a kind of, I think people might have become addicted to the word or what it represents as a kind of having a slight righteous martyrdom associated with it. I'm just saying that we might want another word. Are there many Arabic words that are used instead of struggle, possibly? What did you say with confidence?
Yes.
To engage with confidence was,
yes.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, himmat is another word, himmat, and that means that really has to do with confident resolve.
Confident resolve. I mean, see that's just so fun. Confident resolve. Yes, we must engage with confident resolve and encouragement. You know, feeding the heart. I love that. Well, all too soon, I must extend invitations to our listening audience to contribute, but. I will be seeing you. Pierre Zia will be presenting in Washington, D.C. for those of us lucky enough to live or visit here, or if you know, have friends in Washington, D.C., Pierre Zia will be presenting this weekend, December 4th through 6th, The Path of the Heart, and pillarshouse.org, the evening talk, Spiritual Chivalry, Answering the Call, and then two days of contemplative work, 2 days of confident resolve?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, good. 2 days of confident resolve, of cultivating confident resolve. I'm all for that. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. And SufiOrder.org. And is there any last blessing or exhortation you might want to pass on to us?
I would just like to thank you, Caroline, because I recognize that you are a voice for awakening to planetary consciousness in our time, and your voice is reaching many, many people, and I admire the dedication of your sacred service.
Oh, you have strengthened my confident resolve. Thank you so much, Firzia.
Yes, all right. So let us all strengthen our confident resolve, that tease everything into practice. Write a shout out, a thank you to NG in Martinez, California, who pledged for Bodhisattva of Compassion, the mystical tradition of Kuan Yin by John Blofeld for a pledge of $100. And she says, woof, woof. And we go, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, we have 15 minutes to pledge in a dedicated fashion, because the world is dangerous. But we also have, we are offering Pir Zia's book, Mingled Waters, Sufism and the Mystical Unity of Religions. Mingled Waters, Sufism and the Mystical Unity of Religions is an account of the deep ecumenism of Sufism as evidenced in a variety of historical, literary, intellectual, and spiritual convergences, drawing on the Quran, prophetic traditions, classical Sufi sayings, traditional stories, and verses from Arabic, Persian, and Urdu divans. Mingled Waters examines the inner teachings of Hinduism, Buddhism, Zoroastrianism. Yes, you can have all of that for a pledge of $120. It goes very well with Bodhisattva of Compassion for a pledge of $100. But you can have Pir Zia's book for a pledge of $120 by calling 800-439-5732 or pledging online, kpfa.org. And also just for anybody who pledges anything, right? Everything is honored and valuable. Just the chart of now, it's like, tell them what they win, chart of now. So we have in the sky what's called Thor's Hammer. The moon has just entered Capricorn, which is the council of convening of leaders. All of us who insource our authority, suck the chi out of authoritarianism to be self-possessed rather than merely possessed. So it's the moon, 135 degree angle to Mars at 12 Leo, back to Neptune and Saturn and Ceres. There we go. It's called a Thor's Hammer. And everybody gets one in their metaphoric magic backpack who pledges any amount. Thor's Hammer can sweep corruption out of the halls of governance and bring in accountability and justice. Let's see it. Let's see it, team, right? Because it is dangerous. We are facing danger. And this wonderful network, this station, this show that began on September 5th, 1996. It's really all of us. For all of us, it's our time. What is the field in which we are all navigating? So part of it is Neptune, dreams, vision, water, imagination, and money, right? Years ago, economists pointed out that all of our metaphors for money are all water, cash flow, currency, liquidity, rising tide, all of that. And I go, oh, this could be good news for pragmatic mystics, So let's see the waters of life and heal our relationship to money, that the money be purified by each person's pledge, right? That KPFA, that the Visionary Activist Show, can be sufficiently, that it can be a source of irrigation in the community, as money and water are meant to do. So again, 800-439-5732 would be very wonderful to magnetize. The sun right now is at 25 plus Taurus, which is about magnetizing Magnetizing. We'll bring in Marge Piercy's poem, A Charm for Attracting Wild Money, A Spell for Attracting Wild Money. I will rub my hands with honey and run through the vaults of banks. Come, money, you will not be locked up in dark trust funds or clanking, you know, whatever the thing is, you know. No, soon you will be free to join with others of your kind out there in the community. You know, come, money, and build a murmuring swarm in my purse. KPFA's purse, Visionary Activist Show purse, that would be really great. 800-439-5732. Many, many things, many, many offerings at kpfa.org if you want to be enticed. But I love the companion book of Bodhisattva Compassion, The Mystical Traditions of Kuan Yin. Let's see ourselves as Kuan Yin. I love Sophie Strand saying, don't pray to Hermes, pray as Hermes. So don't pray to Kuan Yin, pray as Kuan Yin. Let's see ourselves, Kuan Yin, you know, surfing in on this tide, this wild tide that we're all navigating. You know, eyes half closed, 1 foot forward to be able to leap into action whenever necessary. So the power of Kuan Yin, we love that. So there's a lot to cooperate with. The sun right now, again, is its image is a Spaniard serenading his beloved. Let's think of the Pacifica that way, drawing others into your viewpoint, the power of secret dreams, having an influence. And we go, yes, that's good. It's right next to Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius, right? So whose image is a mature woman reawakens to romance? Why not? That could be Pacifica herself. And so this idea, when all is terrifying, let us be terraists. Let me spell it in case the NSA transcription service is at work. T-E-R-R-A. Ists, right? Let us all be terraists, and that's part of also what one is pledging for. 800-439-5732 for green hermeticism, for practicing everything that we know, teasing it all into application. Never has, you know, all parts of us been more needed to report in for duty. Our imaginative parts, our practical parts, and part of now is, you know, the Saturn-Neptune conjunction. The planets are moving from Pisces vision into Aries action, and then back into vision, and then back into action. We go, well, that sounds like the Visionary Activist Show. And I want to also just bring up all of our ways of participating in a metaphoric way. Haruki Murakami, great book, IQ84. But in that book, you know, the world is out of kilter as it is, you know, and horrific things going on. And so two of the protagonists, and let's all be with them now, they go backstage and they reimagine the desirable world and they construct it, you know, backstage, the world as it's meant to be, the desirable vision. And then at a certain point, they pull the sluice gates and the ideal world pours into the actual. And it's like, all right, that's kind of what we're doing here, team. So pledge for that, 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org. Again, we're offering Pier Zia's wonderful book for a pledge of $120, Mingled Waters, Sufism and the Mystical Unity of Religions, because we do want to practice everything. You know, let's bring every, and it is an opportune, terrible, opportune time, and that's what we're here for, the crisis of leadership, you know, that we again all inhale our authority and we pledge to community. I like thinking in the spirit of Haruki Murakami that, you know, they go backstage to reimagine the world. Well, that's where we are right now, team. And I'd love for a little more pledge for your dogs who listen. I hear that. You know, pledge for people who can't pledge, who are in prison. We have a lot of listeners in prison. You know, pledge for those who can't by calling 800-439-5732. You know, and let us, you know, trickster medicine, let us adopt the strategies of nature and pledge for that. So I do love, I carry with me in my magic backpack, that coyotes have been observed on camera, watching humans put up traps, cruel traps, you know, and then the humans move on and the coyotes watch them, and then they come and they dig up the traps and then they spring the traps with a stick. They do this, right, as a community service. And then for attitudinal flourish, they pee all over them. That's one of our many, many, many strategies. We watch the traps. No. We dig up the traps. We spring the traps that it harm nobody, and then we pee all over it. I think that's a good way to go. So if you like, you want to pledge to the trickster, ingenious part of yourself, part of this station, part of this show, you know, 800-439-5732. Again, Pir Zia's book, Mingled Waters, Sufism and the Mystical Unity of Religions, is available for a pledge of $120. Bodhisattva of Compassion, Mystical Traditions of Kuan Yin, for a pledge of $100. You know, many wonderful things that people have been pledging for. You know, absolutely, there's that's right. Oh, Chris Hedges, that's right. For some deeply useful dark gloom and hearteningness, again, for a pledge of $25, you can go to KPFA, bringing Chris Hedges to the Bay Area. So that's also wonderful. So what is before us? You know, what is before us? You know, endogenous indigenuity. Indigenuity is a wonderful word that was passed on to me by Bob Goff, who heard it from Dan Wildcat, whose student, Curtis Catawba, created the word indigenuity. So endogenous indigenuity. Endogenous, a wonderful word, meaning we have within us, you know, receptors for DMT, for cannabis, you know, we have receptors within us for mythology, like so as we speak of these qualities, there's a inside us that hums, and it's like, oh team, I must not be being very magnetic. 800-439-5732, we're in our final minutes, and would love for people, we see you, again, dedicated vision. You know, the field in which we're moving right now is really about absolute dedication to the desirable vision while being fully aware of danger, which is enormous. So pledging for that, you know, and KPFA, you know, really is a lineage of mentors. That's also part of what we're pledging to, the continuation of this wonderful station in a surprisingly, like, let's go flush manner, where it has, you know, waters and then it can feed tributaries. Thank you so much, Anonymous in Pleasanton, California. That will do, but let's prime the pump. Anonymous is often so generous. So to all of you anonymi out there, 800-439-5732, really good. So we're teasing everything into practice. Trickster is the keeper of democracy. And it's a part of all of us that comes alive in dangerous times. Now, in nature, it's nature's evolutionary trickster genius. It's seeds that sprout after cataclysm. You know, it's all of that that we want to be connected to. You know, this irresistible invitation to all parts of us to report in for duty, you know, and to come on back from any kind of exile, in a way, into full participation. You know, Pope Francis, who spent 2 years in exile, called it his dark night of the soul, said, you know, we must live our exile. And when we return, we will be kinder and more capable of, you know, of contributing to community good. So everyone, come on back in, 800-439-5732. We've got a minute and a half. We can do it. That's part of our thing, and that's also the round table that we brought up with Pir Zia, comprised of shining, radiant, equal individuals. So, you know, again, it's the idea of having spiritually cultivated people participating in governance, and that's part of our dynamic. All right, we're almost on our way out. 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org. Go ahead, surprise me. Thank you, Robert, in American Canyon, California, for pledging for Mingled Waters. We're all one breath. Thank you, indeed. All right, more next week.